You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsfantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good. Nice short day at work today. I got lucky, got out of here, and get to record some prospect pods. And today we're doing my hometown team, actually.
Your hometown team, but not the team you root for.
Right.
But it's a really good system after selling off some of their big-name pieces. The Chicago White Sox have a fantastic farm system, so it's deep. So let's just jump into it. After I remind everybody where I can reach you on social media, that's MDTomp, FWFB, me at Justin Mason, FWFB. So go ahead and let's talk about the White Sox. Any pieces close to the majors?
Several. I just don't know, with the White Sox timetable, I'm not sure we really see any of them this year. I wouldn't bet on it, but I mean, I guess we'll start with the ones I know for sure we will see this year. I'm going to go down my list and start at number 10. I remember Carson Fulmer. I still have him. He's a prospect for me. First-round pick. 2015 was a pick. His 2017 stats, not pretty. 7-9, 126 innings, 96 strikeouts, and 65 walks. But, you dig into the profile a little bit, he's still got the fastball and the slider. The two-pitch mix there makes him destined for a relief role, and as does the delivery. But the White Sox have no reason not to do that. His major league career so far, he's allowed 6 homers and walked 20 batters in 35 innings. But, it's only been 15 outings. Only 5 of those have been starts. So he's been messed with a little bit. He hasn't got hasn't got to settle in. But if you take out an inning in the third outing last season when he gave up 6 earned runs, he only gave up 24 earned runs in the last 22 innings. I know it's messed up with sample sizes and stuff, but he did flash usefulness. With the White Sox being where they are, and I'll never give up on a Vanderbilt arm until it's way past due, and that's what Fulmer is. I love Vanderbilt arms. But, 2018 is finally the year where we're going to figure out what his role is. If he doesn't produce as a starting pitcher this year, he's going to go to the bullpen because White Sox have a lot of prospects rising to that occasion that are going to need starting positions, and he's going to get bumped out of a role by one of them guys. I don't know, Carson Fulmer, is he any interest in you in any redraft leagues this year?
I mean, maybe in AL.
The division's poor. Mm-hmm. He's going to get a lot of, Detroit, Kansas City, Minnesota should all be pretty weak offenses.
I think Minnesota's offense is going to be decent.
I'm not sold on the Twins. I think the Twins lose 85 games this year. I think last year was a complete fluke.
See, I think if they can get one more like decent to frontline starting pitcher, I think they've got a really good team. And I think that offense is going to be pretty good. And I really, unless a guy's got elite skills or, pretty good offense behind them, I don't really want people pitching in Chicago.
Right. But, he's got some strikeout upside. I think he's got something he can unlock there.
AL only for me.
Right, and I agree with that. That's fair. I guess another guy we could talk about that's going to make an impact this year, and we're not starting out with the big guns in the system, which is probably frustrating to some of you, but Ryan Cordell, nobody talks about him. He was twice traded. He was a former Ranger prospect, was in the Lucroy deal. He was the player to be named. Went to the Brewers, and then the Brewers flipped him to the White Sox for Anthony Swarzak when they made their kind of halfway run to the playoffs this year, the Brewers. It was kind of baffling to me they didn't get more than just Swarzak, but that's for a different podcast. You look at the White Sox, Cordell is a perfect fit for a team in this situation. 284, 349, 506 in AAA with 10 homers and 9 stolen bases in limited time. He played pretty much every position on the diamond, but he profiles best at third base or on the outfield corner. He's more of a National League player because of he can play everywhere, but he strikes out a bit too much, and he does draw a little bit of walks. But even at a White Sox team that has right now their third baseman is either going to be one of Yolmer Sanchez, Tyler Saladino, or Alan Hansen. So, I mean, this guy has the potential to be like a Mark DeRosa 2.0. So, I mean, why wouldn't you try to see what you have here?
And I think there's a really good shot for him to make the opening day roster. This is a guy I will have shares of this year in AL only, but I'm also in the I think I've told you, I'm in a 30-team keeper league with 100-man rosters, and we do a Rule 5 draft, and he was left unprotected. So I think he's one of those guys that may fall to me in the Rule 5 draft, and I'll be able to snag him and just keep him my active roster all year so I can keep him. Because, I mean, he does have power, and he does have speed.
He has some speed, right. You know? And those are the most interesting things in this fantasy game. He's not going to kill you on average. He's going to strike out, but everyone does, and he's going to walk enough, so he's going to cancel it out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's got a chance to contribute on a bad major league team, but and he's a guy that nobody talks about. So
yeah,
and another guy nobody talks about is Charlie Tilson. The White Sox got him from the Cardinals for Zach Duke, and he was a former first-round pick from the Cardinals. He kind of grew up in the area from New Trier, Illinois, which is not too far away. You know, he fared very well in AAA for the Cardinals in AAA Memphis. He's hitting .282, .345, .407 with AAA Memphis. At the time of the trade, the White Sox acquired him for Duke, called him up to the majors immediately. He tore his hamstring in his first game. So he went on the DL, never came back up to the show in 2016. In 2017, he pretty much missed the entire season with a stress fracture in his right foot. So he's a highly injury-prone guy, but he does have enough potential to steal probably 20 bases if he gets enough time in center field. I mean, the White Sox center field might have been the worst position in baseball last year. They finally found something with Leury García, but he's more of a utility guy. He can play a little bit of infield, so keeps his value like that. And Charlie Tilson was probably supposed to be the guy who got hurt, but I think he's a speed-first, gap-to-gap offensive guy that can play an above-average center field on the defensive side. He did play in the fall league this year. The White Sox, he came back and played in the fall league, so he should be healthy enough to go into spring training and possibly win that center field job. Like I said, his clock's already started, so it's kind of – and last year he was credited with a full year of service time because he was on the Major League DL. So I mean, he's ready to go. And like I said, he stole 45 bases in 2015. So, I mean, it's easy to see him getting 20-plus, and the White Sox have reason, number one, not to let him run, and number two, not to play him because, I mean, the alternatives on that roster are nothing right now. Guess you want to talk about the big guns now?
Yeah, let's talk about the big boys because there are some big boys in this farm system that are going to make a big impact. It may take a little while as they kind of mature through the minor leagues, but especially with Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech and others, there are guys that make this team from a real-life perspective really interesting in the future, but also from a fantasy perspective.
I'm just going to go down the list. I got 1 through 9. We'll hit up these guys, and I'll give you a few smaller notes on guys at the end of this. They got 9 guys in the system that 8.5 that I like. One guy's on the fence. We'll talk about him. I know he's one of your boys. We'll get to him in a minute. Number one in this system for me is obviously Eloy Jimenez. Nothing else really needs to be said. Everybody knows who he is. You're looking at a guy, I mean – the one question mark about him is the hit tool because he does strike out. If the hit tool maxes out, you're looking at a potential Miguel Cabrera. If the hit tool hits the floor, I mean, you're looking at a Jay Bruce. Either one are fantasy, you know, fantasy contributors. So, you know, your high investment in him now will likely pan out. It's a safer option. He had a shoulder injury last year, appears to be over it. 312, 379, 568, 19 homers. And is in the middle of the order and in an abbreviated season, didn't start till May. Homer to fly ball, you know, ratio was a bit lower than it should be, but I mean, he played in a couple offensive or defensive couple pitching heavy parks. So that'll be good. He walks enough. He's a top five prospect in baseball for me. I believe in my latest version of my list, he was fourth. I still keep going back and forth. Number one, I'm not going to rate Ohtani on those lists. I don't think that's fair. You know, he's going to be owned everywhere, and he's not going to touch the minor leagues. So, you know, I keep going back and forth. Acuna is my number one guy in his own tier. Vlad Jr., Tatis, and Jimenez, and Robles. So I keep going, you know, back and forth between those guys. I think I've settled in Robles fifth. My 2-3-4 keeps changing. Depends on what day you ask me. But those three are tough to rank. But Eloy, 30-plus homer seasons and nice batting average when he gets, you know, when he rounds into shape in the major leagues. And that's a hell of a player, even in this era. Number two is Baby Thor, Michael Kopech. And I think Kopech, Eloy's not going to hit the south side this year, but Kopech, I think, has a small chance to do so in September. Just because, you know, we talked about this on a previous pod, pitchers. I'm all in favor of, like, doing what Atlanta Braves style. Pitchers should move fast because pitchers have limited bullets. I'm a firm believer that pitchers are going to get hurt no matter what you do. The only thing you can do is not prevent it, but delay it. And, I mean, if you get an arm like this, you got to rush him up. He's a perfect, like, Hollywood-type guy. 50-game suspension for a band stimulant. Punched a teammate that broke his hand. Has a reality show girlfriend. All this stuff. 90-mile-an-hour slider. 98-mile-an-hour fastball touches 100 with wiggle. Changeup is coming along, flash plus. He had question marks about the changeup about a year and a half ago. Went to the Fall League. Pretty much threw exclusively changeups as far as he's concerned. The pitch, flash plus, it's a good enough pitch for me that he's got front of the rotation upside. If you don't believe me, I took him in the Roto World Dynasty Invitational, so I back up what I'm saying here. The command is a bit shaky, but what 22-year-old doesn't have shaky, or 21-year-old doesn't have shaky command right now. It'll improve. He is going to be prone to blow-ups occasionally just because, you know, the stuff is so volatile. But he's one of the top arms in the minor leagues and has a true number one ceiling. A top five starter with swing and miss stuff. I think he's everything you dream of in fantasy, and he's the type of guy that can carry your squad. Number three, this is a tough decision for me between three and four. Ultimately, I went with Melkanson on three over Luis Robert. Probably the minority on that. I love Hanson. He led all of the minor leagues in strikeouts. Ready for this number? 141 innings pitched, 191 strikeouts. Ooh. So that'll play. 280 ERA, 1.17 WHIP, 51 walks. So yeah, he does walk a little bit more than he should, but he's also stifling hits at a well enough frequency where you can kind of get away with it. Second round pick in 2016, 49th pick overall in the draft. Just nasty stuff. 6'7 frame, which works well in the sense that he gets a good downward plane. He gets, a fastball. But it's also a negative because, you know, guys like that see Tyler Glasnow, how much trouble he has repeating his delivery. Hanson runs into that sometimes. Big, tall, goofy 6'7 guys don't really throw strikes consistently enough. But hopefully, you know, and Hanson has this in the bag. He gets to come up to the major leagues or get close to it, and he'll get an invite to camp this year, and he'll get to work with Don Cooper. And the White Sox do wonderful things with their pitching prospects with Cooper. They get squeeze out a lot of things, a lot more than they should on G guys. And they get guys up that aren't heralded. Their whole team is always full of unknown guys, and they always, last year being the exception, but they normally find two or three guys that stick. Hanson's in good shape. Giolito showed flashes at the end of the season. They're different pitchers, but, you know, they show a lot to work with. Reynaldo Lopez gives them another nice arm in the system that they have. It's a sick system, which is kind of why I pointed to Fulmer, being this is his last year to prove it, because he might go to the bullpen with all these guys coming up. I think Alec Hanson's a high-end number two in the fantasy game because of the strikeouts. He's going to walk a little bit too many guys to be a number one. You know, I'm on board this hype train. Luis Robert is number four. And admittedly, he could have been number three, but we don't know much about him. I'm hedging my bets a little bit because, you know, how many overhyped Cuban imports have we had? I mean,
a bunch in recent
a
years. I mean,
bunch.
it felt like for a while there that every single one was going to hit, and
Right.
then we've had a bunch fall flat on their face. So, I mean, I think it's probably unfair to give.
Obviously, they're all different people,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. You know, we can't really tag them all as, you know, one thing or another. But you're right. Until we see him, maybe we should temper our expectations a little bit.
Which is what I'm doing here. If I, you know, I still have him ranked fairly high. He's going to be in my top, you know, 40 in my prospect list for fantasy. He's a bit older. He was 20 years old, and he was playing in the Dominican Summer League. So take the numbers with a little bit of grain of salt, but they do flash what you can expect. 310, 491 OBP, 536 slug, 3 homers, 12 stolen bases. Again, he's 20 years old playing against 17 and 18-year-olds. But, I mean, White Sox had a weird tax issue with him, so they couldn't bring him stateside. I don't understand the logistics behind that. I'm not an attorney. I don't know, you know, or an accountant, whatever. I'm not a person that's, you know, knows why that is. But, I mean, they ended up paying him $26 million. And that's the new CBA. So, you know, part of me is skeptical because he is the last high-priced Cuban import. That's with the way the CBA is set up, that's a fact. He is the last one. So I wonder if that's going to, you know, hype him up a little bit more like we just talked about. But I watched, you know, as much video as I can on him, and he's hard to find video on, a lot of it. He announced, you know, the White Sox outbid the Cardinals at the end there at the full court press recruitment, and he's kind of a unique individual. I mean, he announced where he was going to sign on Instagram, which you don't really see too often. But, you know, he carries all five tools according to everything I've read. A lot of video and stuff. He looks projectable, 6'3", 185. I kind of put it like an Alex Rios comp is what it looks like. And so Rios was a solid player for a couple of years. Remember then?
He was a solid player for every other year for a number of years.
Right, there you go. And, you know, remember famously the White Sox ended up with them on waivers. They were trying to block, I believe it was Detroit,
mm-hmm.
when they're in, you know, and they're trying to, White Sox were kind of a fringe contender, and they tried to block Detroit from trading for him, and then Toronto said, you know what, just take the contract.
Yeah, exactly.
So they ended up doing that. He was okay, but he wasn't.
He was one of those guys you always invested too much in the years he was down and never invested enough in the years where he was up. It was just
– Right. He burned you just enough
to – frustrating in redrafts.
He burned you enough to kind of back off him a little bit, and he tore it up. But
he also had, like, super high upside. Like, he was one of those guys –
He did. He's a 2020 threat. I think he did it a couple seasons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I gotta look him up.
Right. But, I mean, the thing with Robert is next year is going to be the first year stateside. He's probably going to play low A, and I imagine he sticks there all year. He's probably going to play in Kannapolis, and he's probably going to sit there all year. I mean, with the White Sox, you have to look at it this way. He's a big part of your future. You're not going anywhere next year. It's going to be his first year in America. He's a high-priced, you know, you paid a lot of money to get him. Assimilating to another country just without a job coming here would be hard to do. Now imagine assimilating to a new country. You have enough money, more money than you've ever thought of having, and now you're also in a new country where you don't know anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, just get them in one place. Let them play baseball. Don't even worry about the numbers. It's the tools you worry about here. Bit of a mystery, but you know, if you like to gamble, he's your dude. He's a good guy to roll your dice on. I think, you know, I like the fantasy profile. And if I'm wrong, just I'm going down with this ship also. I think he's going to stick in center field. He's got the skill sets to be one of the best players in the game, whether it turns out or not. We'll find out together. My number five, again, this is kind of a couple tiers. I put the 3 and 4 in a similar tier. 5 and 6 was close. 5, 6, and 7 actually were close for me. But I gave Zach Collins the nod overseas for the 5 and 6 spot. Zach Collins is an underrated fantasy player. I see too many people shitting on him because, you know, because he's not going to be a full-time catcher. That's perfect, right? You want him to catch like 20 games.
Yeah, that's exactly. You want him to catch enough to keep eligibility and then play, you know, first base or DH and not get hurt and get, you know, 500 to 600 plate appearances.
Right, he just needs to be passed. And the White Sox are the perfect organization for that. I don't care what we read about, you know, Wellington Castillo and them liking his defense. For years, he's been a terrible defender. It's been, you know, if you trust the data or don't or whatever, That's why the Cubs got rid of him. The Cubs did when the Cubs were bad, they jettisoned him because they didn't like how he was a catcher, how he received the ball and stuff. And now you're going to tell me that he's a plus defender? I'm going to be a little bit skeptical. But then even in years past, the White Sox ran Pierzynski out there. They ran Tyler Flowers out there. Flowers isn't a good defensive catcher. I mean, metrics say that he is, but you know, catcher metrics are worth about what?
The same as most fielding metrics.
Right. If you have, you know, a stat book of catching metrics and $5 in your pocket, you really only have $5, right? I mean, they're not worth anything. But
I know we don't do drops at the beginning of these episodes, but that was amazing.
Well, that's just that's, if you don't if you haven't caught on that I don't trust catching metrics, then you know. But in a perfect world, Collins, back to Collins, he's a part-time catcher that can hit 20 to 25 home runs and post above average OBPs. That'll, you know, he's not going to be a batting average guy, but who cares? 224, 370, 445, 19 homers in Double A this year. First round pick, obviously, in 2016. I hate this comp because everyone said it for a long time, but he's Kyle Schwarber, right? He's what Kyle Schwarber was supposed to be. But the question mark is he 2017 Kyle Schwarber, or is he more like Carlos Santana? And I guess that's what we're going to find out. Either way, though, that's a top five catcher. So he's a guy that, you know, I'm risk averse as far as catching prospects go. We both are. And Collins is a guy I wouldn't mind grabbing.
He's a guy I did grab in that aforementioned huge league because, one, I don't really look at him as a catcher. I just look at him as a guy with catcher eligibility, especially because you mentioned in the past the White Sox have not cared about catcher defense or a guy's ability to call a game. They just want a body behind there. They want literally someone who can catch.
Right, and the White Sox have a DH available to him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fallback option. And if he's a DH, he's a little bit underwhelming, but he's still ownable.
Yeah.
If he wasn't a catcher, the guy with his type of power, I'd give him like 60, 65 power on the scale. If he wasn't a catcher, I'd project him for 30, but catchers don't play enough in this day and age to hit 30 home runs. Very rarely, right? I mean, so I'm hedging it with 25, but I think on a per game like rate stat basis, I think he'd be 30 plus. But as a catcher, I don't think he's going to hit 30 just because the opportunities won't be there. But he's had 20% walk rates in his entire minor league career, so the floor is significantly high. He's bad against lefties, but he's not Kyle Schwarber bad against lefties. So, you know, I like him significantly going forward, and he's a better fantasy player than he is real life prospect. So you're going to see him down on a few lists. From fantasy, he shouldn't be. I guess the next guy is the second piece the Cubs got for, or excuse me, the White Sox got for Jose Quintana. It's Dylan Cease. For some reason, you know, well, now he pitched 93 innings this year, had a 3.28 ERA, 1.2 whip, 126 strikeouts in those 93 innings and 44 walks. But for some reason, when a win-loss records mean absolutely nothing. But he went 1-10, which is kind of one of those weird, quirky things. But sixth round pick in 2014 by the Cubs because he needed Tommy John. The Cubs bet on it and stuff came back better than ever. 94-98 with sink and can bump it up into the triple digits. Big power hook and a change up that's kind of going to determine what kind of his future is going to rely on that pitch because the first two are plus. The change up is kind of a mid pitch right now. I'm betting on it that he can be a starter. But the White Sox, again, no reason to pull the plug on that. They have Carson Fulmer and Reynaldo Lopez, who a lot of guys think have relief risk. I like Lopez as a starter, but he needs a third pitch. Actually, he needs a second pitch is what he needs. But
yeah, he does.
Yeah, but I'm still betting on it. And if not, I still like Lopez. And say Lopez doesn't turn out as a starter, he's going to be a back-end reliever, and that's worth something in fantasy because I'm not checked. So that's the floor, and I think Cease – has a better chance to start. He's got durability concerns. He missed some time with an elbow scare. Didn't have surgery or anything, but he missed some time. And ultimately, I don't know if he's a guy that's going to go deep into games. But right now and nowadays, you don't have to. So I think he's a guy I really like. He's a big arm, obviously. So power pitchers are a premium in this organization, and there's not a lot of organizations that can say. I've just rattled off three guys in the top six at 100 miles an hour that all have a chance to start. There's no other organization that has that. So Yankees maybe, but all those guys are low A right now. So Dane Dunning,
they did a great job in just filling that system up with just a ton of talent. I know it, the major league team is going to be bare this year,
right?
And like you know when,
but there's a plan in place.
Yeah,
it's
when
obvious.
Mike and I did the preview for the actual major league team, it was really depressing. But this,
right.
Yeah, I mean, if you live near their AAA affiliate in Charlotte, like go out and see that.
Right, and I can't wait for all these guys to reach the majors because, like I said, it's the closest park to me. And as a prospect hound, I was at the game where Yoan Moncada hit his first major league home run, which was pretty cool. So you know, seeing stuff like that, I was a fan of the Chris Sale trade just because he brings a lot more talent next to me that's not in Wrigley Field that I don't have to pay crazy amount of money to go see. But you know, Dane Dunning was an underrated piece they got in the Adam Eaton trade. He went 144 innings, 168 strikeouts, 38 walks, 2.94 ERA, 1.15 WHIP. University of Florida, he's kind of looked at as the throw-in in that deal, the first-round pick in 2016. He was kind of the guy that got caught. University of Florida, the Florida Gators are stacked pitching when Dunning was there. It was A.J. Puck and other guys like that, Alex Fajardo, all them guys. So Dunning kind of bounced back and forth between the bullpen and the rotation. So he's kind of a little fresher arm than you would think a lot of these guys are. But he's an athlete. He kind of wears those goggles too, so he's going to be kind of a cult hero. Sinker-slider combination, gets a lot of ground balls and strikeouts, obviously, as the 168 and 144 innings. Above-average command, which pushes everything up, all the pitches up a grade. My comp for him, I hate comps, but I think he's athletic. He's a little bit smaller. He's Marcus Stroman for me. I know that's an aggressive comp, but I'm going to say this. Marcus Stroman is probably the most overrated pitcher in fantasy. So this is probably minority opinion on that.
How
but I think,
dare you?
I don't like – he doesn't get enough strikeouts, but I think Dunning has a chance to be a kind of guy that fits that skill set. He works fast. He's athletic. Can feel his position. But I think he might have a tick more strikeouts, which is always a good thing. He's a very nice dynasty ad because I still don't think he gets enough publicity. There's not many pitching prospects in the game that have a higher floor, in my opinion, than Dunning. He's proven that he's also proven in college that he can be a shutdown reliever. So there's a pretty good backup plan there if he needs to. He's going to make the jump to Double-A this year, and he'll start to see some more advanced hitters. He's a guy I'm going to watch, but he's also a guy scooping up everywhere just because nobody's talking about him. He's probably going to be in the back end of my top 100. So. Number 8 on my list is first-round pick in 2017. Went number 11 overall, Jake Berger. Went through the Missouri Valley Conference, hitting .339, .420, .620 for his career. 21 homers in 2016 and had 22 in 2017. Power's the game here. I'm not sure about the hit tool, but the power is going to be here. I put the hit tool as average, but that's only because it plays up because he walks a significant amount. So a right-handed hitting third baseman with some pop might have to move to first. I think he can stick at first, or third, excuse me. But he's not going to be a Gold Glove candidate there. But you don't really have to be if you can hit like this. He's a borderline top 100 piece. I think he's just going to miss. But the White Sox are aggressive with college hitters. It's kind of been one of their faults. Recently, I mean, you look at like Gordon Beckham and a couple other college bats they've picked up, Collins. They move them kind of fast. So Berger should be moving fairly quick as well. And Berger will probably beat someone like Collins to the majors because he doesn't have to, you know, learn how to catch either. Berger is playing first or third base, so just go up there and hit, you know. So fantasy profiles, his fantasy profile is very nice because of the power. So everyone get on board the Jake Berger train. And can't wait for all the atrocious puns that he's going to.
Another guy I just picked up in that Dynasty League.
There you go.
And I don't know, obviously, you know, this is something we'll start hearing next month, but I don't know if you've seen any video of him in the offseason.
Yeah, he's slimmed down quite a bit.
Yeah, because there were questions about the defense and whether
right,
he could stick at third.
Right, because he's too big. Might not grow third, right. Mm-hmm.
And he may still, but it's a good sign to see that he is working hard to stay in shape so he can stay at third for the, you know, immediate seasons.
Right. And, you know, third base, like we said, fantasy, we don't care about defense. Just be passable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We only care in terms of will they stick there long term.
Yep. That's 100% in, and I think he can. Especially in that organization. I mean, who's there? There are other alternatives. There are none.
No, well, so. Now that Moncada's playing second, I mean,
right.
You know.
So, and I think they got a lot of, Latino talent, international free agent talent coming up through the system, but those guys are light years away. So, if Brugger establishes himself, I don't see any of those guys pushing him.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9 on my list, Blake Rutherford. He was in the Todd Frazier, David Robertson, Tommy Canley deal. 260, 326, 348 in A-ball, 2 homers and 10 stolen bases. Pre-draft comps, Jim Edmonds, Grady Sizemore. Throw those out the window. Not because I'm giving up on Rutherford, but he just doesn't hit the ball in the air enough. And it's hard to bank on someone being able to take to a significant change like that. He's a line drive hitter, which is great. But I think that caps the home runs at about 20, just because, again, he doesn't hit the ball in the air enough. He makes enough contact, though, but he just doesn't hit the ball in the air enough. So double-digit home run potential. Like I said, I'm going even to the high end, and I'll say 20 because he's a heady baseball player, knows what he's doing out there. Had some nagging wrist injuries and stuff like that, which also sapped the power. But he hit 33 doubles and 510 at career minor league at-bats. So it shows you that there's some power there. Maybe he makes that adjustment to get back up into the elite prospects conversations. But until he does, he won't. But he's still a usable major league player, just not the high upside that you might have paid for early. Sorry, Justin.
It's okay. I'm still a believer. I'm not willing to write off a guy that I really liked his swing.
Which you shouldn't. Don't write him off. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and this is like if you, for some reason, were priced out in Dynasty Leagues, like, this is the time to go and buy. Because he is not going to be in really anybody's top 100 prospects coming into the season. And now's the time to get him as a throw-in piece.
Right. And that's the exact perfect way to look at it. We talked about Mickey Moniak on the Phillies episode. If I had to pick between Rutherford and Moniak, it's Rutherford for me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And based on what we saw, and they both have similar problems. But
the hit tool is, I mean, with the power potential, right, for me is with Rutherford.
Rutherford's at least hitting, you know, showing signs of an average. Mm-hmm. And so he's a guy, and he's still got the power potential in there as well. Probably not a center fielder, but like I said, not many fantasy matter. Just needs to stay healthy. And he has injuries to blame. Moniak didn't really have any injuries to blame for his struggles. So, you know, we'll get. I'm still on the train. There's another power hitting outfield prospect coming up for the White Sox. So that's kind of the upper tier guys. Now I'm getting down into kind of the sleeper range. One of the highest-rated international free agents of 2013, which was the same class as Eloy Jimenez, is Micker Adolfo. Finally healthy. He's a strikeout machine. I want to make that very clear. Strikeout machine, 31% last season in A-ball. So there's a chance this might be the last time we ever talk about Micker Adolfo on a Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast. But I do want to say 264, 331, 453 with 16 homers and a tough offensive yard. Like I said, he was a top bat in the 2013 international class, even like over guys like Eloy. Huge raw power, a natural strength and long arms generate leverage, and he uses his strength and, you know, he hits home runs. He had a lot of injuries, needs to get healthy. So he still really wasn't fully healthy last year, but he flashed enough. He's a terrible outfielder. He's a decent runner, but he's not a candidate to steal any bases. Just because he's injury prone and he's going to get bigger. He's 6'3", 200 pounds. He's got room to fill out. He's a perfect right fielder in the sense that he has a good arm, but again, he's not a very good defender, so I don't know how much he's going to play in the outfield. It's all power here. You're not betting on a hit tool. He's the type of guy that can hit 240 for you but hit 30 home runs. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. Worth a flyer for sure.
He's a guy in a different system. I might be more interested, you know, more interested in.
Right. If he's, I know I'm going to the extreme level here, but if he's like a Marlin, he's their top guy.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking here, I have him 12. So he kind of gets a little buried. Same sort as this guy, number 13 for me. He's in the Chris Sale trade, Luis Alexander Basabe. He was a guy I picked to be a breakout prospect this year. I thought he was going to kind of put it together. You know, being in Chicago, he has a chance, and he still has a chance to be the center fielder of the future. Just is how the organization is structured. He was in high A this year, 221, 320, 320, with 5 homers and 17 steals. Kind of a bust year. He couldn't repeat his 2016, which still has me kind of wanting to own him. His 2016 season, he went 264, 328, 452 with Boston. He's a raw outfielder in every way, defensively and offensively. Struggles picking up spin on the breaking ball, but he has 11% walk rate. He plays an above-average center field once he irons out the routes. The stock is down here. He's a nice buy-low candidate, but Basabe is a guy that you can get included in a lot of trades. I'll do some quick hits on guys. Zach Birdie, Tommy John surgery, likely out for the season. He's closer of the future, whatever that means in fantasy. I'm not trying to get on a reliever like that. High strikeouts, but again, Tommy John, wait to see what we have. Don't invest on a reliever that's going to be out a whole season. Just don't do it. But keep the name in mind, but don't do it. They traded for Thiago Vieira, who is a Mariner prospect. I threw an inning last year in the major leagues, struck out a guy. 17 innings in AAA and 36 innings in AA with good strikeout numbers. Fire-breathing, right-handed pitcher. Doesn't strike out as many guys as you would think due to the stuff, but a couple adjustments here and there. You can maybe unlock it. Hard slider, mid-90s fastball that touches 100. Can be a closer to the future for this organization again. So, again, you don't want to waste your investment on Birdie if you don't have Vieira. And, you know, it's don't own relievers is what I'm telling you, but keep them in mind. Gavin Sheets was a high draft pick for them. Struggled hitting for power, which seems to be a thing with Wake Forest prospects. Remember Will Craig from a few years back, same thing. Struggled to hit for power. I'm a little bit more of a believer in Sheets, though, a left-handed swinger, probably first base only. I've seen Lucas Duda comps on him. If he gets the power figured out, I like that. He does walk a good amount, so it does work. You know, I've also seen Lyle Overbay comp, and Overbay is a better average version of Duda without the power, so, you know, he can go anywhere with this. I lean more toward the Lucas Duda stuff because I do think the power is real. So he's another guy to know. Quick hitters on guys. Tito Polo is a speed threat, speed defender with an average hit tool. He could also factor in the outfield mix for the White Sox in 2019-2020. Jordan Stevens is a back-end starter with a deep arsenal. Good curveball, but he's another candidate for the bullpen in this organization. Ian Clarkin, the guy from the Yankees, back-end starter, lefty, 90-93, touches 95. Don Cooper special probably there. Casey Gillespie, they got him from the Rays last year for Dan Jennings at the deadline. I don't know why the Rays were acquiring relief pitching at the deadline, but they did. 223, 297, 343, disappointing season, 15 homers and 20 doubles. 2016 season, though, he had 284, 388, 479 between AA and AAA. He's a switch-hitting first base option, and the White Sox have an opening at first base DH, so maybe he can claw some at-bats there. Luis Curbelo is one of the aforementioned shortstop prospects, shortstop second base prospects I talked about earlier, Latin American kid. He's actually from Puerto Rico, sixth-round draft pick. Had knee surgery, pretty much lost full season. Probably come back and play second, third, short. Plus power potential, though. Below average hit tool, but a plus power potential from a middle infielder with good bat speed. So he's a guy to follow. The White Sox system has turned it around a tremendous deal in the last couple of years. Let's imagine what a team with that much talent on it if they couldn't win at the major league level, but they got all these hauls from the minor league level. But White Sox are a good organization to follow and some nice prospects here to own. That's for sure.
All right. Well, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWF, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. And that will wrap us up for this episode. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.